Let's bring in our friend, Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith. Happy Friday.
Hey, Don, thanks so much. And thanks so much for having me to talk about this. I've been watching this whole situation, and I think you're absolutely dead right. I don't think this ordinance is going to win in the court system in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. But it does show, starting with the mayor-elect, Sherelle Parker, remember, she started talking about, hey, maybe we need to bring back stop, identify, and frisk. And now with this this ordinance that they did vote for, they're going to address the ski mask issue, the baklava issue, the face covering issue, not because, like the ACLU stated last night, they said there's no evidence that says ski masks cause people to commit crimes. Of course not. We have got to be logical about this, and I think your city council was. So I think that's a real. I think Philadelphians should feel some optimism here.
And admittedly, we're desperate for some optimism on this front. So maybe there's that going on, you know, but which I hate to admit, but, you know, it's the truth. We had yesterday. I couldn't believe it. First of all, it was breaking news just as I was signing off. There was news of one inmate in Philadelphia Correctional Center, one inmate who was found killed. And then on the other hand, just as I was signing off around lunchtime, there was word of this Philadelphia prisoner, Gino Hagenkotter, who escaped. He was on a work detail. And thank God, not a violent killer like we had in Cavalcante in Chester County. But it's the fourth time and the third. It's the fourth time in a year. It's the third time in what, less than 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's really concerning. What do you see here when you see all these different prisoners? And it seems pretty easy that they're escaping.
Well, here's the thing. Around America, and you have this problem in Philadelphia, we have it in Tucson, Arizona, where I live. We have stopped putting money into our prisons and our jails, you know, because, again, for the last 3.5 years, and this has been part of the defund the police movement, is a lot of these county boards, city councils, and of course, state legislators are saying we're not going to put any more money into incarcerating people. And you add in the lack of correctional personnel around this country, and you have, you know, again, your fourth escape in a year. And, you know, we had down in Tucson, Arizona, we had former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who was in a federal medium security lockup. He got stabbed by somebody unknown. We still don't really know the circumstances of that. But this was a federal prison that just earlier this year, an inmate got a hold of a firearm and tried to shoot a visitor. And only because the firearm malfunctioned is somebody not hurt or dead. But we are seeing this around the country. And of course, you have legislators like Cori Bush from Missouri, who just wants to close the St. Louis County Jail. She wants to close all the prisons, stop locking people up. And again, coming back to Philadelphia, I think your Philadelphia City Council is realizing that this last, mm-hmm. you know, 3.5 years of saying, you know, we don't need the police and we don't need jails mm-hmm. and prisons and we don't need the criminal justice system and it's systemically racist and all of that. They're saying, boy, all of those ridiculous theories and policies have led to nothing but dead and injured Philadelphians. And you know, for it forces people who can to leave.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, one of our listeners, longtime listeners, Denise, who, by the way, is with the Chapman family team, she has a great comment for you, Sergeant Betsy. She says that I think that businesses should put a sign on their door that says ski masks are not allowed in the store or the school or the library. And Denise makes the point, just like they made you wear a mask during COVID, yeah. That was enforceable. That's a great point.
Denise is brilliant. And because if they were able to tell us all, we all saw those signs, right? You know, no face covering, no service, et cetera, et cetera. Let's turn the tables on that. That's a great idea. And again, nobody says that because you're wearing a ski mask, you're a violent felon. Yeah. That's not what we're saying at all. But I think that people are logical enough to look around the country, and of course, right there in Philadelphia, and see that you have these thugs. Yes, I'm going to call them thugs, who are victimizing their fellow Philadelphians as well as visitors and businesses. And, you know, you've got carjackings and shootings and all this. And again, all around the country, people want to hide their faces. And in this ordinance, I encourage everybody to go online and read it. There are exceptions. There was a lot of discussion about First Amendment exceptions. And, you know, this was not, I feel like the city council was very measured in the way that they looked at this. This wasn't just a knee-jerk reaction. Oh, we got to get rid of ski masks and that'll solve our crime problem. And they don't think that either. But what they are doing is they're showing the law-abiding citizen, which is most of Philadelphia, by the way. Most people are not criminals. They're also showing their law enforcement officers that we support you and your mission to keep people safe. It would be nice if they'd come out with a statement asking Larry Krasner to maybe do a better job at his prosecutorial duties, but maybe that'll come.
Yeah, this is true. You know, when you think about that, you look at everything that's going on, national level, local level. I do think we've turned an important corner as far as everybody is realizing the disaster that was caused by the defund the police movement. Do you see that, or are you still worried about, you know, I mean, let's face it. We have not had a change of guard as far as Democrats running. You know, look at Chicago, look at New York, look at Philadelphia, look at L.A. So they're not changing the political party, but I do see, at least here on the East Coast, especially with New York, it's a different issue because they have more than 100,000 people who are illegal folks there. That's making an impact here in Philadelphia, the crime. But what are you seeing as you look across the country, Betsy?
Well, we're seeing both sides of that. So you can look at some of the insanity of, for example, in my native Chicago, Mayor Brandon Johnson just called out the raggedy white supremacists who are the ones causing crime in Chicago. Excuse me. So that's kind of insane, right? And yes, we all know that's not true. We know that, like Eric Adams, Brandon Johnson is so far over his head that he just really doesn't know who to blame because he doesn't have the integrity and the intestinal fortitude to blame himself. He's the one who caused all this. Now, on the other hand, I'm missing my grandkids. I'm probably already getting sick.
Oh, no.
Little petri dishes that they are. But, you know, here's the thing. You look at, for example, in Washington, D.C., carjacking's up 800%. You had an on-duty FBI agent carjacked just the other day. The agent's car, body armor, and radio were stolen. Now, this is on top of the Biden granddaughter's Secret Service detail having to fire on car burglars who were attacking a Secret Service vehicle. That was against policy, by the way. But you've also had, and we've talked about this, various elected politicians in Washington, D.C. who are being victimized. So they're starting to pay attention. And Muriel Bowser, the mayor there, is starting to pay attention. But she's having to battle her city council. So we've seen both sides of this where I see some movement. One of my concerns is, for example, when we look at the southern border, you're starting to hear some talk about bipartisan measures. We're going to tie the Ukraine money to the border, and the Democrats and Republicans are willing to maybe slow the border down a bit. And I hope that the right stands strong on that and demands that we have to do something about the southern border. Eric Adams in New York has a $4 billion deficit because of the migration that he encouraged to his city. And you know what he's doing now? He's canceled the next 5 police academy classes because he doesn't have the money to hire cops. That's a disaster, and it's just going to get worse. So there's some things happening on both sides. And what people need to do is pay attention. They need to get involved. And then, of course, next year, we need to vote.
Yes. I mean, that's a piece of it. By the way, we do have, I'll just interject a little more. We have so much breaking news this morning, but one, a Georgia or a D.C. court has just ruled on this, saying that former President Donald J. Trump is not immune from being held accountable in those civil lawsuits related to January 6, 2021. This is a long-awaited decision from a federal appeals court. It's based in Washington, D.C., which will tell you a lot. But the decision makes this is new law that's being created around the executive branch and particularly around the presidency. So longstanding ramifications to this. This is a pretty important ruling. It will have significant implications for several cases against Trump, but also moving forward, defining the presidency and the executive branch. But this is a D.C. Federal appeals court has just come down with this decision. These were those, remember, some of the Capitol police officers wanted to sue, they pushed for civil lawsuits against Trump after they were injured. So they're trying to sue Trump in civil court, blaming him. They claim that he sparked some of the violence ultimately. And so this is a civil case, but it's also a high court ruling. So this no doubt will go to, I imagine this will end up be another situation where it pops up to the Supreme Court level. But I just wanted to, that just happened. We just had the George Santos ruling. And of course, earlier, as I came on the air at 10, we learned that retired Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, obviously an iconic American woman, a Reagan appointee or nominee, she has just passed away. So we've got a lot of breaking news this morning, Betsy. I just want to put that in there.
And I want to remind people that when you talk about these police officers wanting to take civil action against Donald Trump and others for the January 6th riots, let's not forget that a man by the name of Sergeant Trey Penny, who was a Dallas police officer, the day that a Black Lives Matter activist murdered 5 police officers in Dallas. This was pre-George Floyd, but post-Michael Brown, Ferguson, Missouri. He tried to sue Black Lives Matter, and a federal court shut him down. So this is going to be interesting when this case in Washington, D.C., if it does go to the Supreme Court, because can you or can you not hold someone civilly accountable? Remember, we had 260 violent riots after the death of George Floyd. How many police officers injured? And yes, we had police officers killed and we had civilians killed. Have sued Black Lives Matter, Antifa, the city, state, and county governments where those riots took place. Because let's not forget, the George Floyd riots were very often encouraged by political leaders and in some cases by police leaders, not the protests, but the riots. So I think this case in D.C. is going to have even far more reaching implications than just how we view and have to legally view the presidency. It's going to be interesting times.
Yeah. You make a couple of great points. And that is that I always talk about media bias, having come from a broadcast, television news background. And I often say to people when I talk about media bias, the biggest bias we see is by omission. So, you know, NBC News was all over. ABC News, all the, you know, all the stations broke in. Oh, George Santos, this bad Republican. But nobody talks about, for example, Senator Bob Menendez or others doing wrong, right? Who are accused of wrongdoing. And you could argue that what Menendez is accused of, especially with regard to the foreign affairs rules, where, you know, was he brokering deals? Was our national security in any way, you know, was that violated? I mean, those are some pretty serious allegations against him. You don't see that being put in the headlines. And just what you said about all of those violent riots that happened, in which police officers during those summer of 2020 riots, I mean, here in Philadelphia, my God, how many officers were severely injured? Or, you know, maybe it wasn't a life-threatening situation, Betsy, but there were many who went to the hospital, were out, and were rattled, if you will, as well, but physically injured. Did they survive? Yes. But that's never put into context, to your point. That's never brought up. And that's a real bias that we see.
You're absolutely right. And the post-traumatic stress that we are now seeing in law enforcement officers post-2020 riots is extraordinary. And now I encourage everyone, regardless of your political bent, to watch that documentary, The Fall of Minneapolis, and just to see the faces and the tears of those police officers in Minneapolis who were virtually abandoned by their administration. They had to run from the rioters. It was just, it was viscerally frightening just to watch it. And we know some of those police officers. And that's the thing. When you see that from a perspective of these cops who are, you know, their wives and dads and you know, they're just normal people, yours and my neighbors. Mm-hmm. And you know, that media bias and very often that political bias of oh, well, that's not a big deal, but this, you know, kind of a thing is a big deal. You know, we really need to pay attention to that, and we really need to stop that. I mean, that's why the National Police Association exists. We're trying to get people to understand. That's why our mobile billboard, you know, says about law enforcement. It says, you know, they're friends and neighbors and parents, but they're heroes. You know, we just need to see cops as people.
Yes. You know, to your point, I was looking this up. And by the way, it's an Australian. It's so funny who picks up these stories. But they were talking to Liz Collin, who is somebody who her family was targeted during the riots and had these protesters turning up to her home because her husband was the president of the Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis at the time. And so she put out her own Alpha News documentary. Well, she's the one who put this out, The Fall of Minneapolis, mm-hmm. that you're talking about. But it's interesting who's interviewing her, who's picking up that story. When I first looked it up, it was actually an Australian group. That's who, you know, it's like the BBC or Australia. They're doing these stories talking about us, but it's not something you would even see. Well, I mean, we're talking about it, you're talking about it, but it's not something mainstream on ABC News tonight. You know what I'm saying?
And here's the thing. You know, she has a best-selling book out called They Lied, and that's what the documentary is based on. I've actually interviewed both Liz Collin and her husband. Her husband was a police lieutenant in Minneapolis. She was the CBS weekend anchor, and she was very nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. You know, she wasn't left or right. She just reported the news. After the death of George Floyd, and her husband had nothing to do with the death of George Floyd, but after the death of George Floyd, she was taken off the air, put in an office, and then demoted just because she was married to a cop. And the reason they attacked her husband is not because of George Floyd, but because as the police union president, he came up with a T-shirt that said Cops for Trump, and they had to flee their home. It's just extraordinary.
Unbelievable.
And so she made this documentary. And that's one of the reasons that, and we're going to hear more about this in the election season, but the truth about the Derek Chauvin trial, the truth about the death of George Floyd, the truth about the autopsy, that's all coming out now in a very factual, unemotional way. We're going to hear a lot more about it. And that's why nobody here is interviewing Liz Collin in the mainstream media. And that you've got to go, you know, you got to look at the Daily Mail or an Australian outlet to find out anything about it. But it's more and more is going to come out.
Yeah. And I think the truth, I mean, well, my great grandma Rose always, you know, she said the truth is like the wash. It always comes out, you know, it's like, but so it will come out. But then we realize how much maybe we all feel foolish or we feel we were all suckered. And then we look at how all of this impacted every one of us. And I think that that's a shame. But at the same time, I'm encouraged by it, I have to say. What as far as police budgeting, because I was looking at Philadelphia, the police budget, and they keep saying, oh, we have this unprecedented budget. Then when I go through some of the budgets, and I think to myself, they're doing more of these programs in the police budget and giving out civilian jobs and using the police budget for other things other than hiring police officers. What do you make of all that? And as far as the National Police Association, which obviously, you know, you're part, you are an integral part speaking for the National Police Association. What is the advocacy there to say we need to stick to the staples of budgeting for police, law enforcement, hiring, and the basics as far as what officers need to do their job?
About 90% of any police budget is personnel costs. And that's not just a police officer's salary, but that's health benefits and, you know, uniforms and cars and things like that. But we are seeing this trend, good on one hand, bad on the other. From a good trend, we're seeing more civilians hired to do jobs that police officers were doing, like forensics. And of course, we have dispatchers and records clerks and things like that. But there are a lot of jobs in community policing and crime prevention and case follow-up on nonviolent crime, things like that. That's a good thing to spend your money on. But unfortunately, one of the ways that a lot of these departments, you know, who are, you know, this is all influenced by your political leaders. One of the ways to defund the police without saying you're defunding the police is move money around and say, hey, we can't. This is just exactly what Eric Adams is doing in New York. You know, he is saying, hey, I got to put more money to these migrants. So I'm going to take that money out of the police budget. You know, so I'm not going to hire more cops for a while to funnel that money to pay for a stupid decision I made. That's basically what he's doing. So, yeah, when you look at Philadelphia's budget, it's a lot of money. I mean, it's a big budget. But there's a lot of money that is being moved around in departments like Philadelphia so that the anti-cop woke people can be satisfied. And you're going to have less cops because of it. One of the mistakes that the Democrats made when they started talking about defund the police or reimagine the police was exactly what we're all living now, this horrible crime in this country. So now the talk is about diverting funds, putting it toward housing programs mm-hmm. and mental health programs. Some of that's good, but the bottom line in any police budget is you have to have cops to answer 911 calls.
Yes. There's another piece on the front of the Philadelphia Inquirer. It's an opinion piece, but they are blasting, of course, police, blaming Philadelphia police because they are, quote, no shows in court. And this is their way of obviously undermining police and supporting Krasner, like defending DA Larry Krasner, because the headline is they're derailing cases and undermining our justice system. Philly police are no shows in court. I just tee that up for you, why they can't or don't show up in court. Why that headline is misleading, in other words.
Well, exactly. This is something that, again, is a direct result of these last 3.5 years of vilifying law enforcement. I guarantee you two things. One, cops are not showing up in court on some cases because they don't believe they're going to be properly prosecuted. If I've arrested somebody and put together a case and I know I'm going to go to court and I'm going to watch, you know, Krasner's people or the judge go, oh, yeah, you know, here, $50 fine, you know, for this theft, get out. What's the point of me showing up? But the other issue is cops in Philadelphia, like other big cities around this country, are exhausted. Remember, you don't go to court on your shift unless you're a day shift cop. You go to court on your off time. Yes, you get paid for it. But if you have worked 12 hours overnight, you get off work at 6 a.m. and you have court at 10 o'clock, are you going to go home and try and take a nap? Or are you going to just go to court? Or maybe you're not going to go at all, because tired cops are a real problem in this country. And we have to understand, too, that there are personnel rules, union rules, where a cop can only work so many days. It's usually 16 hours in a 24-hour period. A lot of cops who have already put in their 16 can't go to court.
Right. Yeah, because ultimately, if they go to court, what happens at that point? Do they just not get paid, or how does that work? I mean, ultimately, is it on your own time?
If you have already surpassed your 14 hours or 16 hours, whatever the limit is, and you go to court, you will not get paid.
Yeah.
And you're also violating policy.
Yeah.
So you could get in trouble. I mean, you could literally get, instead of getting paid, you could get suspension day. And what is supposed to happen in those situations is there's supposed to be someone to notify the court that the officer has surpassed their time limit and we need to we need to continue the case. But a lot of times that doesn't happen. I mean, think about it, in a court system as big as Philadelphia and as chaotic, because you guys have such a huge, big crime rate. You can imagine that the communication between the district attorney's office and the police department and city hall and HR and the patrol division. I mean, think about all of these entities. I'm going to guess the communication is not great, because let's remind everybody, it's government. I've worked in government virtually my entire life.
Yeah.
Government doesn't do well when it comes to many things, including communication.
Yeah, well said. Well, tell me, what are you working on now? What's next for you, Betsy?
Well, I tell you what, the National Police Association is, we're coming to the end of the year. We are continuing with our mobile billboard. We are continuing with my show. I have a show called the NPA Report that is on the First TV. It's on Pluto. It's on DirecTV, where I interview interesting people like Liz Collin, Sheriff Mark Lamb. I mean, just anybody who's a law enforcement leader or an interesting person. And so we've got that going on. And, it is the giving season, and we are a charity. And the money that we take in as a charity goes directly to fund things like body armor for police canines whose agencies can't afford it, or to start explorer programs or other community policing programs, and to get involved in court cases where we think police officers have been wrong or the community has been wrong. Mm-hmm. Remember, we're still fighting to get the Nashville Covenant school shooting manifesto released. It was a few pages of it were leaked, but we're trying to get that whole manifesto released so that law enforcement can study it and see what we can do to prevent things like that. So we are incredibly busy. Everybody needs to go to nationalpolice.org. Take a look at the amazing articles and the cases that we're involved in. We have a deputy in Nevada. She was just absolutely wronged by her agency, catastrophically injured in a car crash. and we're going to try and help her get some justice. So it's an organization that works so hard, not just for police, but for the community that supports us and the community that needs us. We recognize that, you know, people need cops. That's why they're there. And we want the communities around this country to get the best police protection they can.
Well, we thank you. Again, it's nationalpolice.org, the National Police Association. If you pull it up, you'll see Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith, and all your great interviews pop right up with your interviewing various individuals and your interviews on Newsmax and all these other national sites, too. So, Betsy, thank you so much for joining me and for joining us and really dedicating yourself to so many years of supporting law enforcement and protecting and serving.
Thanks, Don, so much. Thanks for all you do for the law enforcement in your community.
Thanks a million. Have a happy Friday, Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith. So it's the nationalpolice.org, and that's where you go. If you, and they are a 501c3 nonprofit. They also give out grants, so they have grant programs, and they have an educational branch, and Betsy teaches classes as well. So they do so much, and they're just a terrific organization as well.